Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcast, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feet to the right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings. And royalty reigns again in the NHL.
And welcome to another unofficial Rink Royalty podcast. It's episode 5. We've got an excellent episode for you guys today. Before we bring in our guests, let's get a check on the boys. Jack Weber, how you doing?
Doing pretty well, Ryan. Should be an interesting game tonight with Gross and Nick in goal. But, hey, you never know what can happen, right?
We'll see. If the Blackhawks can insert an accountant, anything can happen. Russell, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, and if the Zamboni driver can beat the Leafs, anything can happen as well.
We're hopeful. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest. His name is Jack Fraser, but I think everyone in the hockey world knows him better as Jay Fresh. Jack, how are we doing tonight?
Not too bad. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome. Glad to have you on with us.
Yeah, glad to be here.
So I just want to get right to it. Do you have a favorite hockey team?
Yeah, I'm a Penguins fan. We have Jack Johnson in common. Our admiration of the King. I've been a Penguins fan ever since I was 9 years old, sitting in front of my TV in Nova Scotia, figuring out, you know, or watching the draft lottery and finding out who Sidney Crosby was going to be drafted by. So it's Yeah, I think I ended up making the right call, but if I'm not mistaken, I was only a couple hits of a lottery ball away from being a Kings fan, so close enough.
Yeah, that's true. And correct me if I'm wrong, but are you in Toronto right now?
Yes. Yeah. No, I have since located to the center of the hockey universe.
Okay. Yeah, because I've seen a couple of your posts on Twitter. You know, you're driving to and from Halifax. So you're originally from Nova Scotia, right?
Yep, I'm a Maritimer, I spend most of my time here, which is great because people always think that I'm like a super biased Leafs fan, Yeah. I'd completely throw out any of my opinions on them based on that, when I have always disliked the Leafs very vehemently. So
we had Tony Ferrari on last week, and you may know he's a Leafs fan.
Yeah, they all are. That's how it works. You talk to anybody in hockey, half of them are Leafs fans, the other half are Canucks fans, I've noticed.
Well, Jack, yeah. Not only is both our names Jack, but we also both live in Toronto and don't like the Leafs, so it seems like we've got a lot in common here.
That's good. I'm glad we have some solidarity going on here.
Yeah, so, Jack, I want to get to I'll call it your baby for lack of a better phrase, but you are kind of known for making analytical player cards that are available through your Patreon. I know I'm a subscriber. I know Russell is. I just want to get your thoughts on what's the origin of making those?
Yeah, so that was kind of the thing, I guess got me noticed by anybody. I basically had access to these kind of stats resources, the subscriber websites that were out there. And, it really was just kind of for my own purpose. I had all this kind of data that I was jumping from site to site trying to see. So if the Penguins were rumored to acquire somebody, I'd have to, check a whole bunch of websites just to get some vague idea of what was going on with them. And so, for my own purpose and for a couple of my friends, I decided to see if I could just kind of put it together in a form that would be very quick and to the point and have all the info that I needed. And then kind of on a lark, I decided to post it on Twitter. And then it turned out, I guess, that a lot of other people were interested in it too. And it all kind of ballooned from there. So, with quarantine and everything, I graduated into an economy where my job prospects suddenly evaporated before my eyes. So there was a lot of time for hockey related nonsense. And, I guess I took decent advantage of it. And here we are.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously there's a lot of the other sites out there, evolving hockey, top-down hockey. I know you have a lot of stats that are kind of taken from there and incorporated into your cards. But I just think it's so cool how, your even strength cards on there, you can flip through there. Can you kind of just dive into why you have the categories that you have on there? And maybe just a quick overview of what each one means for some of those people that aren't as familiar with expected goals for or expected goals against, terms that we use.
Sure. So I guess the two things that I have in mind with them is the first one is making sure that kind of all the essential stuff that I would want to have on hand if I'm trying to figure out, just a general overview of a player who I haven't watched before. Most people haven't seen most players before. I think some people pretend that they are a little bit more familiar with the eye test of guys than they actually are. I kind of come to the table with the humility to say that, if the Penguins were to acquire Alex Iafallo, I haven't seen that many Kings games. I'd want to have a certain number of stats in front of me so I could get a general sense of the kind of game he plays. So that's one factor. And then there's also just kind of, the graphic design, economy aspect of, you can't have everything on there and it wouldn't be visually appealing or accessible if you did. So, I kind of pick the ones that I find the most important. Just to give kind of a quick, I guess, overview of some of the ones like on the 2021 even strength cards that you were talking about. It's early on in the season, so I did kind of try to pick specific ones that might be able to give, a bit of a glance and a smaller sample. So there's like even strength goals, even strength primary assists, and points. There's quality of competition and teammates, which is one that I find useful for kind of figuring out how a player is deployed and trusted by their coach. So that basically is a stat that measures the quality of the teammates that a guy is playing with and the quality of competition he's facing based on time on ice. So for example, if a guy has a really high quality of competition, you can figure that the coach is matching him up against top lines a lot or top pairings. And the same goes for having a high quality of teammates. It's just kind of good context to have where it gives you a sense of how a player is being deployed. And then as for the expected goals stuff, that is kind of a more recent, I guess, advance in the fancy stats world where, you know, these models have been built, including one by my friend Patrick Bacon, whose model is kind of the basis for a lot of what I'm doing, which, you know, it basically measures shot quality and quantity that's going on in the ice. So, you know, it's basically a model that doesn't value a point shot the same as a, you know, breakaway or a two-on-one or something like that. And by doing fancy math, you can basically pick out and estimate how a player is impacting those on-ice stats. So, you know, how is Drew Doughty impacting the LA Kings generating scoring chances when he's on the ice, or, you know, protecting against scoring chances, you know, and that's a very useful stat that kind of gives you a good, you know, bird's eye view of what exactly is going on that maybe you wouldn't even be able to really pick out from the eye test. And sometimes it can have some surprising, but oftentimes pretty revealing results.
Yeah,
that's cool, Jack. And I know you touched on, first of all, love all that you do. I think all hockey fans should subscribe to your work. It's just great how you put it visually for kind of a lot of people to understand more clearly. But Kings fans kind of had the privilege of watching the debuts of two of your, I want to say this with a lot of sarcasm, two of your most favorite players, Jack Johnson and Drew Doughty. As a Penguins fan, I'm sure you got the chance to watch all the great stuff Jack Johnson was able to do the last 2 years. But I want to touch on Drew Doughty and kind of get your take on his last few years. I want you to kind of be gentle, if you could.
Yeah, so Drew Doughty, actually, so I mean, that's a kind of good pivot point in terms of my own, you know, personal story, I guess, is that there was a point last year where I did pivot away from just doing the player cards and visualizations and stuff and started writing a lot more. And that ended up kind of snowballing in a good way where now I'm with EP Ringside, you know, like I'm a professional hockey writer somehow, which is definitely a surprising turn of events. But really, I think the first piece that I wrote that got any attention to it was my piece on Drew Doughty, where I basically made in my opinion, pretty detailed statistical case for, you know, Drew Doughty having completely fallen off a cliff before the 18-19 season, and basically being consistently very poor in terms of performance and results in the past two seasons before this one. And I mean, the fact of the matter is that I really don't think, based on what I've seen and what the stats say, that there really is a lot of argument of whether Doughty's performance was, you know, good or bad in those past two seasons. You know, like from what I've seen, from both sources, it looked pretty ugly. I think the big question and the debate that I found really interesting about Doughty was whether it was, you know, him actually having a kind of, you know, decline in ability, or whether there was something going on in terms of effort or efficiency or the way that he was playing that was maybe driving the results. And I had some really interesting conversations with Kings fans and Kings writers and development coaches and scouts who kind of, you know, gave their opinions on what they thought was going on and whether they thought maybe, you know, if the Kings were a little bit more competitive, you might see Doughty play a little bit more motivated and have a better impact on the ice. And, you know, so far this season, you know, Doughty has been better by all indications. The point totals, I think, are a little bit bumpered up by some, you know, secondary power play assists, the kinds of stuff that analytics people will generally say to be a little cautious about. But, you know, I think the fact of the matter is that if you were coming to things from an analytical perspective on Doughty in the past two seasons, you would say that Doughty was one of the reasons the Kings were struggling so much, that they were playing a guy who wasn't performing well for like 26 minutes a night. Whereas this season, I think that he's been just about break even in terms of his underlying impacts, not, you know, not too good, but also not too bad either. And, you know, I think that that's had a positive impact on the Kings. And I think it's personally pretty encouraging considering that contract goes on for as long as it does. So who knows, maybe Doughty sees the 2022 Olympics coming and he's decided that he's going to play his way back onto that conversation. But either way, I think Kings fans should be at least kind of tentatively a little bit relieved that he seems to have picked it up a bit this year.
Yeah, he's got to make that $11 million contract at least worth something. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, like you mentioned, he's been playing pretty well, or somewhat well so far this season. So we'll see how it goes going forward.
So, Jack, I wanted to just quickly touch base back on the player cards just real quick. You know, yeah. I pulled up Athanasios, player's card, and I'm looking at 94th percentile in finishing. Can you kind of just break down what that entails?
Yep. Yeah. And that, you know, that's something that I missed touching on earlier. So I'm glad you brought it back up. Yeah. So one of the kind of important things in terms of looking at how a player's impact his team, especially if you're kind of comparing it to like a baseline of whether you want to say average or replacement level or something, is finishing talent. You know, like expected goals are kind of an average. They're a baseline. They're based on, you know, data from the past that predicts how shots are going to turn into goals based on the quality of them. But, you know, anybody who's watched hockey knows that there are players who have really good shots and there are players who have really bad shots. And there are players who are going to be able to finish scoring chances more dangerously than the average guy. So in this case, and on those cards, finishing would refer to goals scored above expected. So, you know, let's say that Athanasiou has taken shots that are worth, you know, we'll say 2.5 expected goals total, like the expected goals of each shot that he's taken has added up to 2.5, but he scored on four of them because he's a good goal scorer. So his finishing would be the gap between those two goals. So in the case of those cards, I do a thing where I kind of add it up and make it over a 56 game pace just to make sure that guys who have maybe a bit of a bigger sample size or a bigger role on the lineup will benefit from that. So in the case of Athanasiou, I don't have his numbers right in front of me, but I'm just assuming that he has scored a decent number more goals than he would be expected to based on the quality of shots he's taken. And we know that Athanasiou in the past has scored goals at a pretty decent clip before. So I would say that there would be some reason to believe that, you know, that scoring touch is legitimate and maybe not, you know, just some puck luck.
Yeah, gotcha. And to get back to the expected goals for, there's been a bit of a debate I've kind of noticed in terms of expected goals for and to Corsi for percentage. I want to kind of get your take on that. I've always thought Corsi was kind of the main term in terms of how a player affects play on ice. So I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah, so it's kind of a, you know, it's maybe a little bit of a obscure debate going on at this point. Basically, the idea is that, like, Corsi came first. Like, it was easier to calculate. You didn't really have to build a model for it, which is why it's available pretty broadly. So Corsi, for those who aren't aware, is just shot attempts. So any attempt to take a shot, whether it's on net or misses or hits the post or blocked, that's counted as a shot attempt. And then it very popularly used to be used as kind of a proxy for puck possession. So the idea was that a team or a player who has more shot attempts for while they're on the ice than against is probably possessing the puck more. And it was kind of used for that in the absence of, you know, like a time on attack type stat, like they have in the NHL games. Mm-hmm. Since that time, and especially in the last 5 years or so, you know, people have found ways using the broad set of data that we have to figure out for each individual shot, using the information that the NHL records for each shot, what the likelihood of that shot going in is. So as opposed to Corsi, which will, you know, take the Nick Lidstrom shot from center ice that beat Dan Cloutier, and a breakaway goal, you know, in the crease and say, okay, those are both one shot attempts. You know, the expected goal model will basically absorb all of the data from the past 12 years or so. And if you give it a shot and the circumstances of it and all that stuff, like where it's taken from, it will basically give you a number of how likely it is, like they think it will go in. So for instance, if it's like from the point, it'll be like, okay, this has like a 0.5% chance of going in. So the expected goal value of that shot would be 0.05. And based on tests and stuff, that including ones done by my friend Patrick, who I mentioned before, you know, they found that expected goals are a better way of predicting future goals than actual goals, because those are so influenced by kind of luck and random bounces and stuff, and also better at predicting them than Corsi. So I believe that expected goals are the best way to get a really good sense of what's going on the ice, both in terms of what we would call descriptive stuff, which is kind of describing what's going on, and then predictiveness, which is kind of predicting future outcomes based on what's going on. So the Kings, for example, have the worst expected goals percentage in the NHL right now, which does not bode especially well for their future performance, especially because, and we might get to talk about this later, the main thing kind of bumping them up right now is their goaltending, which is currently ranked ninth in the NHL, and I think it's saving them a little bit. So you could use expected goals to look at those numbers and say, you know, rut-row, if the Kings don't continue to get top 10 goaltending, they might be in a world of hurt. So that's just kind of one of many, many ways that you can use expected goals to get a little bit better informed about what's going on.
Awesome. I also just want to, aside from the even strength player cards, you've kind of built up kind of a catalog of stuff. I don't know if you just want to quickly go through all the interactive sheets and the Tableau visualizations that you have thus far to date.
Yeah, so I have done my best to build up a very extensive and pretty thorough collection of visualizations. It's not just about the player cards and stuff. There's a roster builder where you can, you know, plug in any combination of players that you think the Kings should acquire, for example, and see, you know, based on wins above replacement, how they would be projected to finish in the standings. There are timeline cards, so you can see how player stats have changed over time. And then there's, like you said, there's Tableau visualizations, which is basically a bit of software that lets you get really creative with kind of how you present stuff. And I have dozens and dozens and dozens of different options for how you can look at things. So for example, if you wanted to compare a team's, you know, their goaltending to their finishing, and you only wanted to see teams that were in the West Division, and you only wanted to see, you know, defensemen and stuff like that, you know, you have the flexibility to see all that kind of stuff. So really I've tried to, like you said, make a catalog of kind of everything that you could possibly want to see or know about what's going on in the 2021 season right now available. So there's lots of options.
And obviously there's games every day. So how long does it take you to kind of update all this information?
So this is where my partnership with Patrick comes in handy. He is the, we'll say, the brains behind the operations. I guess I'm more of the creative director here. You know, I'm the Steve Jobs, and he's the guy who's actually keeping the lights on. So he has a whole setup in a software program called R that absorbs the NHL's data as it comes in, and then very quietly every day at 4 o'clock in the morning, uploads them all to a shared sheet, which is where all my stuff draws from, which allows it to update automatically and makes my life a million times easier than it would be otherwise.
That's amazing. I mean, I've kind of picked your brain. You probably didn't even know it was me, but doing some baseball stuff in Google spreadsheets and making kind of similar cards on my own end. But, you know, that's me manually grabbing the stats and updating them every day.
Yeah, I will say that. So the stuff on the Google Sheets, I do have to put in manually, unfortunately, until I can figure out a better way to do that. So we're in the same boat there.
Yeah. Now, I mean, obviously the Kings aren't as bad as they were last year. They're by no means great, but I've seen you use the term analytical darlings when it comes to guys like Shea Theodore and other players like that in your articles. Are there any players in the LA Kings that you would kind of put into that category this year based on their numbers?
Yeah, I'd say so. So analytical darling is a term that is, I guess, somewhat popular. I do tend to use it maybe a little too much. Basically to describe a player who has a really good statistical profile, who stats nerds like me tend to really like, but who aren't maybe widely appreciated by broader hockey viewing audience. Sometimes this is because they have a not very flashy skill set, but it's effective. And sometimes it's just because, you know, they play on a team like the Los Angeles Kings that not a lot of people are really tuning into and maybe missing out on. The guy that stands out to me is Matt Roy, who had a really, really good rookie season last year, analytically, really awesome numbers on the Kings. And actually, his success is kind of one of those, you know, things that, you know, you looked at Doughty's results in contrast to them and thought, you know, well, if Doughty was playing like this guy, then things would be a hell of a lot better in Kingsland. But, you know, Matt Roy, I think if you look at his impact on scoring chances, both offensively and defensively, you know, what we would call his play driving, you know, he's kind of that one Kings defenseman who's really getting it done at both ends of the ice, which means he's probably driving possession really well, you know, probably keeping play in the offensive zone, which is where you want it, and which is especially impressive on a team like the Kings that have evidently struggled to do that. In terms of the forwards, you know, Kopitar is still a standout. I think he's pretty clearly the best player on this team, and I don't think many people would probably deny that. I will say that the presumably near to depart Alex Iafallo has been very nicely consistent in the past couple seasons as kind of a what we would call a low event player, who is basically a guy where you send them over the boards and then not very much happens. Like, you don't give up a lot of good scoring chances. You're not going to generate a lot of good scoring chances, which, you know, in some cases isn't what you want on like a top six. But, you know, I could definitely see him being a guy who fits that kind of Barclay Goodrow, you know, maybe not quite Blake Coleman mold for a team that's trying to add an effective defensive third liner, because, you know, that's a role that he's played for the Kings for the past couple of years, and his numbers are pretty consistently there this year as well.
And to your point, I mean, Iafallo is a free agent after this year. You think he comes back or he goes elsewhere or the Kings move on?
I would imagine that they would trade him. I think that there are going to be a lot of teams this year that are looking to make that kind of clever and shrewd decision that the Lightning made last year in adding Goodrow and Iafallo. And, you know, I mean, in Goodrow and Coleman. And, you know, if teams can maybe look at Iafallo and a guy like Andrew Mangiapane and think, oh, well, that's just going to be our Goodrow and Coleman, I could definitely see somebody paying a decent amount for a guy like Iafallo, in which case I think the Kings would be very smart to let him go, at least as a rental, and then maybe look at bringing him back.
Yeah, and just quickly back to Matt Roy. I mean, he's not the flashiest player by any means. He's, you know, Todd McClellan calls him the Steady Eddie in post-game and pre-game conferences. How much weight do you put into a statistic such as goals above replacement, which he consistently is among the top defensemen?
Yeah, so goals above replacement is a bit of a tricky one, and I think for, you know, I think we could go into a depth about that stat that maybe wouldn't be, you know, enjoyable for 95% of the people listening. There are strengths and weaknesses to it. Just to quickly run through it, at least for defensemen, is that, you know, goals above replacement, a lot of it is based on ice goals. Like, that's kind of the most important stat to it. And if you're a defenseman, you really don't have that much control over whether your forwards are putting pucks in the net or not. And so it might be that Roy has benefited maybe a little bit randomly from some of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, the good news with Roy is that if you look at stats that take away any kind of, you know, luck or finishing or forwards play or anything like that, he checks out well regardless. So I think there's only good things to say about how Roy looks statistically, and based on the fact that he's not, you know, maybe the most highly touted player, I feel like that bodes pretty well for the Kings. I'm not sure what his contract situation is right now, but I can't imagine that he is breaking the bank now or will break the bank that much in the future.
Right. Not too bad for a seventh round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, so he's a UFA after this, an RFA after this season. He does not seem to me like the kind of guy who is going to give the Kings a lot of trouble when it comes to negotiations. So I feel like they're in a position where they could lock up a really nice top four defenseman at a pretty low number and get some really nice value out of him.
Yeah, maybe they could lock him up to a Sean Walker type number, like a $2.6 million AAV type contract.
Yeah, they'd be very happy with that, I would think.
So just kind of shifting gears and be gentle with the answer to this question. You know, Matt Roy is kind of the analytical darling. Who would you consider to be an analytical nightmare on the LA Kings roster?
So, I mean, there are guys on the team who have, you know, pretty poor analytical profiles, but really not too many people who stand out too egregiously. You know, kind of looking at the numbers that I have, the one guy who's a forward who really stands out is Carl Grundstrom. I don't know, is he playing that much for the Kings this year, or is he kind of like a fourth liner who's maybe just not doing crazy well?
He's a fourth liner, but he's pretty much a regular at this point.
Okay. Yeah, it might be a sample size thing. I know he was having a fun time last year from what I can remember. But, for whatever reason, he's kind of sticking out in a bad way. And I think you could look at Tobias Bjornfot, who hasn't quite had the best results yet, but who has also, I think, been, you know, put into the lineup pretty early on in his career for a defenseman and maybe in some roles that he wasn't quite ready for. So I wouldn't look too much into that. But, you know, the most important thing for the Kings in terms of their early underlying numbers for me is that Drew Doughty isn't all the way at the bottom there, which is where he's been for the past two years. And, you know, I think the Kings have enough flexibility right now at forward. I mean, are they really going to have their hearts broken if Trevor Moore isn't that good? You know, you guys are clearly kind of building something a little bit more structurally powerful than the collection of kind of middle six talent you're putting out there on a day-to-day basis. So I wouldn't be too worried about anything going on in that lineup, except, you know, maybe, I mean, Drew Doughty has a long way to go to be worth that contract, but if he can at least be serviceable, at least he won't be hurting the team on a night-to-night basis, and you can just kind of work from there.
Yeah, and I just want to get your opinion real quick. You know, Byfield is with the AHL club this year due to the OHL not starting yet. You know, Lafreniere and Stützle are in the NHL. Do you think the Kings made the wrong decision
in sending Byfield, or in letting Byfield play down there and not calling him up to the NHL, or in drafting Byfield?
Drafting, and do you think they should have taken Stützle instead?
So Stützle, it is worth mentioning, has, I think, the second worst expected goal impact of any NHL forward right now. I think only Phil Kessel is below him right now. So he's getting points, and a lot of those points are coming because he is a very gifted player. But I think he is, if you look at other areas of his game, like puck management and decision-making, and especially defensive play, I don't think he really should be in the NHL right now. You know, I think a lot of people are maybe making very hasty proclamations about a player based on, you know, factors that are maybe not fully within his control. You know, I saw there was a poll the other day of would you take Stützle or Lafreniere first overall? And I think like 70% of people voted for Stützle, which is insane based on, you know, if you're basing your assessment of, you know, two players at the top of a draft on 20 games of play and a lot of bad puck luck for Lafreniere. You know, I'm not a prospects guy. I probably know the least about prospects of anybody who's ever been on the payroll of the website Elite Prospects. But everything that I have heard from anybody about Byfield and his kind of potential for the future has been extremely positive. I think people acknowledge that there's things that they want him to work on. There's, you know, maybe functional kind of skating stuff that they want him to maybe improve. But the prospect people who I follow have been dead set that people can hyperfixate on whatever parts of his game or whatever kind of tournament performances or whatever that they want. But Byfield still has a very high ceiling, and I don't see very many of them at all willing to make a declaration that the Kings made a mistake. So I would definitely advocate patience, although this might be completely moot and we might be talking about Quentin Byfield as a Buffalo Sabre after the summer, and maybe this conversation will be all for naught.
Jack Eichel comes over then.
you never know. You never know.
Yeah, so just on the Kings overall this season, you know, the veterans are largely kind of carrying them. Dustin Brown is kind of playing Like he's 25 years old again. Kopitar, is doing his thing. I just want to get your general thoughts on the LA Kings as a team this year. Just what do you think?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't see them as, you know, as a great team right now. I think that they have definitely changed things up from last year, which has probably made them a lot more fun to watch than they were, I would imagine. I've seen kind of early stats that would seem to suggest that they are playing more off the rush this season than they did last year, especially. I think if you looked at their numbers in the last 2 years, when it came to how many of their shots were coming from the point, how many of their shots were coming off rebounds, it was pretty clear that they were playing a pretty uncreative style of game that was, you know, I think really holding back some of their players. And then I think Tyler Toffoli is a guy who had a lot of kind of goals being held back just by the fact that the kinds of chances that he was getting were so, you know, kind of just second chance, like grit and grind, like net front scramble type chances, instead of maybe what he was getting in Vancouver and what he's gotten in Montreal. You know, if the Kings are playing a more open style, then that's good for Kings fans. I mean, they weren't really expected to compete. But at the same time, I would not be super bullish on the Kings kind of moving forward throughout the season. You know, like I said before, they're last in the league right now in expected goals for percentage, which means they're getting outchanced pretty much on a night-to-night basis. Their goaltending has been very strong. Like we mentioned, you know, Jonathan Quick has had his issues. I think he's recovered a lot of ground in the past couple of weeks, especially on that winning streak. Cal Peterson obviously has been exceptional. Unfortunately, like you said, out of the lineup for at least a couple of days here. And the special teams have been surprisingly strong, which is not something that I would have necessarily expected based on, you know, the construction of the lineup. But from what I can see, you know, they're seventh in power play percentage, 10th in penalty kill percentage. You know, those are really nice results. But, you know, those even strength results are not looking too good. And those are the ones that I would expect to really kind of matter. And I could see as the season drags on, especially, I mean, if you're putting Troy Grosnick out there. And of course, now that I say that, he's going to get a shutout tonight. You know, I could definitely see things taking a sudden downward turn for the Kings, but I feel like, honestly, based on the conversations I've had with many Kings fans, you know, you guys seem to have your eyes pretty set on the future, and it really just is a matter of kind of waiting to get there and hoping that some of your younger players can develop. So hopefully I'm not, you know, the bearer of too bad news.
Yeah, I mean, definitely when a new prospect, you know, like Erasmus Kapari comes up for two or three games, so, you know, we put a lot of stock in small sample sizes because we're just so desperate for positivity. But you kind of took away my next question and just kind of breaking down the analytical stats between Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick. So I just wanted to my last question, and I'll ask I'll open it up to Scott and Jack as well. But can you kind of just explain how you got involved with Elite Prospects?
Yeah, so I mean, it was all very kind of, you know, all of a sudden. I had the chance to write my own on Substack for a couple of months there, you know, starting with the Drew Doughty piece, and then, you know, ended up because of how slow the summer was and all that kind of stuff, had the opportunity to kind of build up a pretty deep portfolio of very detailed hockey writing, which I actually released as an ebook last December, and you know, it was $5 for it, and all that went to charity. So, you know, I had a pretty decent sized body of work after only about 7 or 8 months of writing. And then JD Burke of Elite Prospects was nice enough to reach out to me back in January. You know, they kind of assembled this team of hockey writers that they were bringing on board, including Ryan Lambert of Puck Soup and Dmitry Filipovich of the PDO cast, which was, I will say, it was definitely a little surreal to be introduced in a press conference, you know, in this, as you know, it's Jay Fresh, and then it's also these two guys whose podcasts I've been listening to for like 5 years and all that kind of stuff. But it really did come together super quickly. It was like maybe 2 weeks of conversations, and you know, I've been writing for them for about a month and a half now, and it's been a really great experience so far. Definitely a lot different to write for an editor compared to just writing whatever the hell you want, but so far it's been positive, and hopefully the relationship will continue to grow.
Oh, that's outstanding. And I mean, I just read your Sidney Crosby one the other day, and I kind of framed my Ole Mata one I did for Rink Royalty in kind of the similar fashion, obviously using your figures from your Patreon account. But yeah, I mean, I know a lot of us are big fans of your work. So just keep it up is all I can really say. You know, you're doing good things.
I appreciate it.
Scott or Jack, do you have any questions?
Yeah. Hey, Jack, I'm Scott Kimball. Sorry, I'm late to the show here. It's my gift for trying to do podcast work. So I got just a quick question for you. So I got to tell you, I'm kind of old school, whereas I didn't really grow up with analytics. I mean, to me, the most advanced analytic was plus minus. And yeah, it's just amazing what you guys can tell now from stats. Where do you see analytics going in the future?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to tell because they have all that fancy player tracking and stuff going on, but it really isn't clear how much of that, if anything, they're going to be released into the public. I think a lot of that is going to be for teams, for broadcasters, and a lot of it is probably going to be used for gambling. I don't know how much mileage they're going to get out of that. Like, I don't know how many people are going to be putting down thousands of dollars on, like, what top speed will Connor McDavid hit tonight. But clearly they're optimistic about that. The ideal situation would be they eventually do make that data public, and hopefully there's one or two people in the public sphere who have computers that are big enough to deal with that data and make really cool stuff out of it. Otherwise, you know, I think a lot of it is going to be just doing our best to sharpen what we do have available, and do what I really try to do, which is incorporate as many kind of different sources as possible. So, like, for example, right now, you know, the stats that we've mostly been talking about, like the expected goals and all that stuff, you know, all of that is built on the data that the NHL makes public. So, you know, during games, like live during games, they have these numbers of who's taking the shots, who's on the ice, where the shot was taken from, all that kind of stuff. And that's what gets turned into expected goals models and Corsi and everything. But there are other sources of stats that I think are really interesting and really useful when you're trying to do kind of more detailed hockey analysis, and I tend to use them a lot. There's a guy named Corey Schneider, not the New Jersey Devils goalie, unfortunately, although he would probably be better at that than he would be at keeping the pucks out of the net at this point. But no, it's this guy who what he's been doing, and he's been doing it for the past couple of years, is he basically watches games and tracks essentially everything that happens. And he has kind of a list of stuff that he tracks of zone entries of possession and dump-ins and recovered dump-ins and, you know, all kinds of different stuff. Like, it really is kind of insane. And I don't know how he does it. Like, the amount of stuff that he tracks, the number of games that he watches to do it. But the result of all this hard work on his part is that a lot of the kinds of data that, you know, I don't know if the Kings broadcast uses it a lot, but there's these kind of private data companies like SportLogic and Stathlete, which is the one that John Chayka came from, where like their whole thing is that they have warehouses full of people probably making minimum wage who, what they do is basically what I just said Corey does. Like, they watch games, they track everything that happens, and then they sell that data because they have a giant pile of it to teams and to broadcasters. And we never get to see that data because we don't, you know, have $100,000 to pay for it. But Corey does it for the public. You know, he has a Patreon, but, you know, $10 a month is really no tall price to pay for the value of what he's putting out there. And what you end up with is kind of a body of work that really adds volume and you know, and interesting elements to what's going on. So, for example, you know, if you're looking at, you know, Iafallo, for example, and you're saying, okay, here are his defensive numbers. They're really good. Why does he have such good defensive numbers? You know, you're going to want to watch him play for sure. You're going to want to watch shifts of his. And that would be, you know, one of the first things that I do for sure. But you can also go and see Corey Schneider's numbers and you can see, oh, okay. So he's actually a really good forechecker. Like, he's really good at recovering dump-ins. And, you know, maybe one of the things that he's doing that's creating defensive value is that when the Kings dump the puck in, he's tying the puck up against the boards. And every second that he's keeping that puck along the boards is a second that that puck isn't anywhere near his goalie. And you know, that's the kind of stuff that you can really start to put together when you have that data available to you. So I guess my broad answer to your question of kind of what's the future of stats is it's just kind of people who analyze hockey just getting smarter about using as many diverse data sources as possible and just making the best use out of what we have.
Very cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and Jack, I just was curious to get your opinion on one more player on the Kings. Adrian Kempe, he's been, you know, really streaky player as far as his offensive production throughout his career. Had a hat trick the other night against Anaheim, though, but, you know, he could go the next 10 games without scoring. What do your analytics say about the kind of player he is?
Yeah, so Kempe is a guy who, you know, I admit, and I think this is probably true for a lot of people about the Kings, that there's a lot of guys on the Kings who kind of blend into each other, to be quite honest with you. And I think Alex Iafallo and Adrian Kempe are two guys who I think that my brain has kind of put together in the past. You know, I can bring up his results right now to refresh myself completely. But, you know, from what I can recall in the past, like, he is kind of one of the better players on the Kings, especially when it comes to scoring. Yeah, so like this year, his underlying results aren't that strong, but he is scoring a lot of goals. And from what I can recall, he's been decent at that in the past. But, you know, I would say that he kind of falls into a pretty broad category of Kings players for me. If, you know, like, I can see him being an effective middle six player for a lot of teams in the NHL and including the Kings. I mean, when the Kings have the pieces that he can be a middle six player for them, I think that they'll be in really good shape. But, you know, for the time being, they might be playing and maybe a little bit higher in the lineup than they would otherwise want to.
So funny enough, as we were asking you that question, apparently Kempe just scored to the Kings of Edmonton. So
well, there you go. So I'm glad, because I was very worried that the absolute opposite was going to be true, and I was giving completely bad information. So I'm going to take that as a sign that maybe I wasn't completely talking out of my ass. Yeah.
So Jack, you're up with another player.
Yeah. So that Troy Grosnick is really good at scoring goals. So
watch out for that. Outstanding. Do you guys have any other questions for Jack?
I think I'm good, actually. Thank you.
Okay. Jack, you know, just let our listeners know where they can find your stuff at.
Yeah, so, I mean, I am most active and probably far too active on EP Rings. On Twitter. I'm at JFreshHockey. You can find pretty frequently my takes on whatever's going on. And I do also tend to post a lot of visualizations responding to, you know, transaction news and rumors and team news and stuff like that. You can find my writing mostly on EP Ringside, the Elite Prospects NHL Analysis publication. So all of that stuff, you know, I'm posting pretty frequently. Tomorrow, I'm posting a new article about which players are having unsustainable starts to the season, which means I'm going to make a lot of enemies. So if you want to defend me in the comment section, feel free to do that. And otherwise, I think, like was mentioned, all the visualizations and stuff I do, they're all available to Patreon subscribers who pay $5 or more a month. And you get access to absolutely everything. So all the player cards, all the scatter plots, all the team stats, all the goaltender stats, all updating every day, so you can be as educated as possible about this chaotic and crazy game.
Fantastic. Well, I just encourage all of our listeners to follow him at JFreshHockey, to subscribe to his Patreon, and also read his VP Elite Prospects articles. You know, Jack, I just want to thank you for coming on. You know, over the last year or so, I've kind of learned more about the analytics side, in large thanks to some of the stuff that you've been doing. So just keep up the great work. And, you know, I can't thank you enough for being on with us tonight.
I really appreciate it. Any opportunity to emphasize that the analytics stuff isn't just random math. You can connect it to stuff that goes on the ice, and I think that the Olimata piece did a good job of fitting into that tradition of well supported hockey stuff. So I'm glad that people are getting a chance to read stuff about that with the Kings.
Thank you. All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. This is another episode of the Unofficial Rink Royalty Podcast, episode 5. Signing off. Thanks, guys.